a description of the hellish planets. So, let's see, the 26th chapter. Actually, did I do Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya? No, I didn't. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. The 26th chapter describes how a sinful man goes to different hells, where he is punished in various ways by the assistance of Yamaraj. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter, text 27, Prakriti Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Savrasha, Ahankara Vimudatma Kartaham Iti Manyate. The bewildered spirit soul under the influence of the three modes of material nature thinks himself to be the doer of the activities which are in actuality carried out by nature. The foolish person thinks he is independent of any law. He thinks there is no God or regulated principle and he can do whatever he likes. Thus he engages in different sinful activities and as a result he is put into different hellish conditions life after life to be punished by the laws of nature. The basic principle of his suffering is that he foolishly thinks himself independent, although he is strictly under the control of the laws of material nature. These laws act due to the influence of the three modes of nature, and therefore each human being also works under the three different types of influence. According to how he acts, he suffers different reactions in his next life or in this life. Religious persons act differently from atheists, and therefore they suffer different reactions. That's interesting. I'll read that sentence again, because it's quite interesting. Religious persons act differently from atheists, and therefore they suffer. You understand why I'm reading it twice?
Yeah.
Because it's in reference to religious persons, and the word suffer is actually in reference to religious persons. They suffer different reactions. So there's two ways to understand that statement. One is that this is mundane religion, of course. Mundane religion, me dharma, artha, kama, moksha, that even if one gets, let's say, a so-called material positive reaction to his religious activities, that actually causes suffering. Suffering in the sense that it separates one from Krishna. Because the real happiness is, the only happiness actually, is being with Krishna. And related with Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives the example of the dunking stool as far as equating it with material happiness. In the dunking stool, they would put someone under water and keep him under, as a criminal or whatever, and keep him under until he was practically dead, asphyxiated, or, and then they would bring him up and he'd be able to breathe and he was thinking this is happiness. So it's not real happiness, you know, just breathing. But if you weren't able to breathe, breathing becomes happiness. In the same way, if you're experiencing hunger, then eating becomes a very happy sensation. So anyway, the whole material world is suffering. Brahma bhuvana loka panava bharati no arjuna. Brahma bhuvana... From the highest planet to the lowest planet, all of them are places of suffering where birth and death take place. So anyway, so it's all suffering. Suffering in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. So Shukadeva Goswami describes the following 28 hells. Tamishra, Andha Tamishra, Rarava, that's where the Rurus are, Maha Rarava, Kumbhipaka, Kala Sutra Asa Patravana Shukara Mukha Andakupa Krimi Bojana, that's where the worms are. Sandamsha Tapta Shurmi Vajra Kantaka Shalmali, that means like the thunderbolts hit people. Vaitarani, something to do with stool in that one. Puyoda Pranaroda vishasana lala bhaksha sara meyadana avichi ayapana shara kardama raksho ganabhojana shula prokta danda shuka. That means when one gets, that's an interesting word. Danda means like the stick. Shuka means lamentation. So lamentation by being hit by a stick. Avata nirodana, paryavartana, and suchi muka. A person who steals another's money, wife, or possessions is put into the hell known as Tamishra. A man who tricks someone and enjoys his wife is put into the extremely hellish condition known as Andhatamishra. A foolish person absorbed in the bodily concept of life, who on the basis of this principle maintains himself or his wife and children by committing violence against other living entities, is put into the hell known as Rorava. There the animals he killed take birth as creatures called Rurus and cause great suffering for him. Those who kill different animals and birds and then cook them are put by the agents of Yamaraj into the hell known as Kumbhipaka, where they are boiled in oil. A person who kills a Brahmin is put into the hell known as Kalasutra, where the land, perfectly level and made of copper, is as hot as an oven. The killer of a Brahmin burns in that land for many years. One who does not follow scriptural injunctions, but who does everything whimsically or follows some rascal, is put into the hell known as Asipatravana. A government official who poorly administers justice or who punishes an innocent man is taken by the assistance of Yamaraj to the hell known as Sukaramukha, where he is mercilessly beaten. God has given advanced consciousness to the human being, therefore he can feel the suffering and happiness of other living beings. The human being, bereft of his conscience, however, is prone to cause suffering for other living beings. Wow. What's this called psychologically? Where someone has no conscience. You know that.
Sociopath.
Yeah. Well, not only sociopath, psychopath. A psychopath. Sociopath is one who actually does it and creates problems, but a psychopath is one who has the mentality. So a psychopath, that means it, there was actually an interesting book written some time ago. The name of it was No Conscience. Has anyone ever read that book? No. It's about a study of, you know, psychopaths. This person went into prison, and he studied the prisoners to see if they had any sort of conscience for anything they did. And they just didn't. And he actually described that when you look in their eyes, that it appeared like there was nothing behind it. Or there was, you know, just deep hell or something behind it. So there are people like that who don't have conscience. And he was actually talking about what to do, you know, how to rectify these people. And then his conclusion was they are not rectifiable. His conclusion is only through behavioral modification, behavioral psychology. You know, can you teach them to behave nicely, but they'll never develop the internal consciousness. Whereas our conclusion is that by chanting Hare Krishna, even a psychopath can develop conscience. And come to the point, I mean, the topmost manifestation of conscience is when you have someone like Vasudev Dutt who says, I'm willing to go to hell to alleviate other people's suffering. Paradigma key. You found that book?
Yeah. It's called Without Conscience.
Without Conscience.
The External World of the Second Path Among Us.
Yeah, that's the book. So I highly recommend it. It'll scare you to death. Because there are people like that. So here's the punishment. The assistants of Yamaraj put such a person into the hell known as Andhakupa, where he receives proper punishment from his victims, which is interesting. That means that he's able to perceive how his victims suffer. So all these punishments are meant for rectification. In other words, in the justice system, it's called restorative justice. You know, there's a type of justice where it's just punishment for the sake of punishment. Retributive justice, it's called. Where that's generally what people think about justice or how justice should be. They think retributive justice means you get even with someone. He caused me pain, I should cause him pain. So that's the general concept. Of course, that many people have about the justice system, although the best institution would be the restorative justice, where you actually bring someone to the point of understanding what they did wrong, and they feel remorseful about it, genuinely remorseful, and they make changes in their life. There's systems of restorative justice in, I don't know, in America, but in many places, maybe some places in America, where you actually come in touch with the person who you offended or the person you committed the crime against, and they describe their emotions, their feelings about what happened to them. And then you're supposed to ascertain, if you were the criminal or if you were the person who committed the violence, you're supposed to ascertain what are their feelings and reflect those feelings. And that's one of the methodologies that that are used to help people become more compassionate. And it works in some cases, but when you have a psychopath, it doesn't work. But in many cases, it works when you actually hear what sort of suffering you caused the other person and then how they feel about it. And then you reflect it in yourself, you actually do some role-playing, etc., like that, and that's called restorative justice. So what Yamaraj is doing here is a type of restorative justice. It's actually a little bit more difficult than what they do in the court system, that you actually get to be punished by the victim. In other words, the victim causes you the same pain that you caused the victim. And then you begin to understand what it's like. That's a type of role playing. Think about it. Because that's part, see, like I described before, like restorative justice, one of the methods is role playing, that you take the victim's position. So in the Yamaraj restorative justice, you literally take the victim's position and you get punished by the victim. Everybody understands that? The previous victim, now you become the victim. Very, very interesting. So in other words, all these punishments are meant for rectification. They're not meant simply for punishment, because punishment for the sake of punishment has no value. There's no value. It's not that Krishna is punishing you just because you deserve it. I mean, that's one of the things that we really have to understand. It's not that if someone does something to us, that we have to get even with them, that they deserve something. Even that word deserve is a word that separates us from other people, you know, emotionally, psychologically, and understanding-wise, isn't it? You deserve it. Ha ha. And then, you know, like in the American court system, or in the court system, when someone gets condemned to death, many times, when the person is getting killed by lethal injection or electric chair or something like that, there'll be a lot of people who camp outside the prison house. It's called tailgating. I think some of you know what I'm talking about. And they just wait for the person to be killed and they cheer. They have a party, you know, beer and everything like that, like they do at the races. You know the races, you know, tailgating. Nobody knows about that?
Yeah, football.
Football games. And races. In the races, they actually get in the middle of the racetrack, and all these trucks, they're tailgating and getting people getting drunk in the trucks. So they actually become happy when they hear someone suffer, someone being killed, and it's a cathartic release for them. Of course, it doesn't really change their consciousness. I mean, that's the same consciousness that people have when they watch football games and the opposing team get smashed. Someone from the opposing team gets smashed. It's just a consciousness of wanting to see other people suffer. So we should want to see people rectified. That's the real point. And that's what Yamaraj is doing. He's rectifying people in a, you know, it's a little tough way. But actually, let me describe what's happening here. It's in the subtle bodies. It's not the gross bodies. So some people say it's imagination. It's not imagination. It really happens. But it's happening on a more subtle plane. Does everyone understand that? That's why with some of the punishments, the living entity can be punished again and again and again. It doesn't become unconscious. Like if I tried the same thing with your gross body, let's say one of the punishments being described here is that we haven't got to that point yet, where someone is thrown off a cliff and all the bones break as they roll down the hill or something like that. Then they have to walk up again. I mean, practically speaking, with a gross body, you'd be dead. And if all your bones were smashed, you're not going to move very much. I mean, if you've ever experienced just breaking one bone, you can't move. Or you have to use a crutch or something like that. So the person is forced to walk up the hill. So the pain is actually experienced with the subtle body, which is interesting. It's not by the soul, of course, but the subtle body is actually the intermediary there. And it's the soul's identification with the subtle body that causes the soul to think it's pain. It's all the bodily identification, the attachment, which causes the pain, which ultimately is the cause of the pain. So anyway, just like the scientists sometimes can put electrodes in your brain and give you happiness or distress just by putting electrodes in the brain, even though nothing's happening in the body, and then you experience it as if something was happening in the gross body. So even more subtle than that is the subtle body. And Yamaraj is actually doing this on the subtle platform. Try to understand that. So if you get in a spaceship, you're not going to see these things because it's on a subtle plane. If you get in, you know, travel all around the universe, you know, even if you can go faster than the speed of light, speed of mind, or whatever, you won't be able to perceive what's happening in Yamaloka. Because it's subtle. It's on the mental plane.
Could it be like a dream?
Yeah, it's something like a dream, but it's, yeah, a very clear dream. Very, very clear. I mean, just like when I was young, because I would go to these horror movies on Saturday, I would have these very clear dreams of monsters and Frankenstein and what else was there? Godzilla. And witches and, you know, axe murderers.
Dracula,
you know, and I'd wake up crying and I was in intense pain. Crying, Mommy, Mommy. And my mother would come and comfort me. And then I would go back the next week to the horror movies every Saturday. So it was suffering. And, you know, I'd wake up in fearful of the dark. And I mean, anybody ever experienced that when you were young? I mean, it's common for a child to experience these things. So, it's a subtle plane, but it's a very super clear dream. It's not like one of these vague dreams that we usually have, but it's just like crystal clear. And it's, you know, you're there for all intents and purposes, you're there. I mean, the dreams are just as real as what's happening externally. That's the interesting thing. Like Prabhupada talked about how we're in this particular body for maybe 100 years at most, and he said it's a 100-year dream. Like right now, I'm dreaming that I'm a sannyasi. That's interesting. Life is but a dream. Merrily, 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 merrily. Row, row, row. Oh, anyway, so I'm dreaming. You know, this is my identification. But I'm not. I'm a spirit soul. It's part and parcel of Krishna, meant to be, you know, playing in the fields or dancing or whatever with Krishna. And when I wake up, that's what I'll realize. Like when you wake up, Prabhupada described becoming Krishna conscious to waking up in the morning. You realize who you are. You know, the alarm clock rings, and then some of us, it takes a few minutes to remember who we are, where we are, what we're supposed to do. Isn't it? I mean, it wakes up. Where am I? Is it North Carolina? And then sometimes we have dreams and we're thinking, why the hell did that alarm clock go off? It was such a good dream. I dreamt I was rich, driving around in a BMW. And now, oh, even my Honda was taken away from me. You know, so anyway, so isn't it, you ever have a dream you're really upset that it ended? It was so good. And then it ended. So you have these good dreams and bad dreams. So we have a 100-year dream now. I dream I'm a computer engineer. I dream I have this family. I dream I'm a man. And then 100 years from now, the dream's over. The whole show is over. Isn't it? I mean, it's all over. The dream's over. And all this suffering, everything. Yeah, we had suffering in this life, you know, pain in this life, operations, diseases. It's all over and you start again with another dream. Another 100-year dream. Prabhupada said the dreams at night are like 15, 20 minutes during the rapid eye movement. And then the dreams during the day, that lasts 100 years. But you even forget about that dream during the night. So yes, it's something like that. But it's not imaginary. Not any more imaginary than this thing right here. My identification with that. But it's due to attachment. I mean, if you weren't attached, you wouldn't suffer any pain. So this is very important, because sometimes you find people talking about how this is all metaphorical or imaginary or something like that. Or it's just here to scare the bejesus out of people so that they'll behave themselves. Actually, the interesting thing is if someone's sinful, you can tell them about all these things. It doesn't really change their behavior that much. It's shown that the threat of punishment doesn't really change people's behavior. In general, I mean, in certain cases it may. But it doesn't. Just like someone knows that certain type of food will give them a migraine headache. Or whatever, isn't it? Or some reaction. And they keep eating it. I mean, I deal with this all the time, telling people who have some disease that you can overcome your disease by changing your diet. Can't do it. I mean, they know that they're going to suffer, but they can't do it. Yeah, diabetes, for example. Obesity, diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, all these things, you know, types of cancer. They can't do it. Just give me a pill. Especially in America, it's all pill stuff. Just give me a pill, you know, no lifestyle change. So it's not simply the threat of punishment that really changes people's behavior. So that's not the purpose of this description here. That you just become scared. Well, I better chant my rounds. I better follow the principles because Yadaraj is coming to get me. I remember there was one teacher. Whoops, there's a ladybug again. They're actually good. They get rid of the bad bugs. So there was one teacher who would scare her children, saying, you know, unless you chant your rounds, Yamaraj is coming to get you. If you walk outside during the morning program, that's when Lord Shiva's there with all of his little demon associates and the bhutas and the pretas and the pisachas, you know, the witches and everything like that. And so the children were just like scared like that. That's violence, yeah. Yeah, it's abuse. It's actually verbal abuse against children, you know, to do that. So the whole point about these punishments is to rectify the person, and that's why Yamaraj is doing it. He doesn't enjoy doing it, but it's a thankless task. And sometimes he wants a vacation, you know, a few years off with pay. And he becomes, who does he become? Does anyone know this? Vidura. You know, Krishna arranged this whole story with Mandavya Muni. You know, Mandavya Muni gets pierced with a lance and everything like that. Then he curses Yamaraj to become a Shudra's son. And so Yamaraj becomes Vidura. So, you know, he, after a while, he just thinks, you know, I need a break from this job. I want to go out in Sankirtan. Anyway, so hopefully we get finished with the purport. But I think it's important to understand this is not just allegorical, metaphorical. It's real. It's real stuff. And, I mean, even in this, just to continue, even in this world, you know, the physical world, you see punishments like that. I mean, you think things like this don't happen? I mean, look at World War II. What happened to people in the concentration camps? Go visit third world country. Go see, even in India, there's so much slavery, even slavery of women, you know, that they turn into prostitution, they turn them into slaves. I mean, I'm not saying that's good or that's like Yamaraj or whatever. I'm not making a comment on that basis. But there is suffering just as intense as being described here going on in the gross physical platform in this world. We shouldn't be namby-pamby thinking, you know, everything's all right. Everybody just is living nice. I mean, a great deal of the world, was it 30% or something, or even more, doesn't even have access to clean water. You know, so when they drink the water that they can get, it causes them intense problems with the digestive system, and they die. You know, the children just die, you know, from diarrhea, problems with digestive system. I mean, so this is going on in this world. You know, this world is not, you know, what we think it is in America, you know, being protected from seeing the realities of life. But the rest of the world, or a lot of the world, you know, you go Africa, parts of India, it's intense. So there is punishment just like this in this world. There's people being tortured, people being kept as slaves even today in the world. There are literally slaves that are being tortured by their masters, even in India, Africa, even in America, there's slavery. It just goes, you know, people don't see it. I mean, sometimes you read articles about it, but there is actually going on like that. You know, that you hear the stories about people being kept, some lady being kept underground for, what, 20, 30 years by some pervert? And so don't think that, in other words, the point I'm making, don't think that this is just allegorical, metaphorical. It's real. So let's continue. The assistance of Yamaraj puts such a person to hell in his undercooper, where he receives proper punishment from his victims. Any person who does not receive or feed a guest properly, but who personally enjoys eating, is put into the hell known as Krimi Bhojana. There an unlimited number of worms and insects continuously bite him. A thief is put into the hell known as Sandangsha. A person who has sexual relations with a woman who is not to be enjoyed is put into the hell known as Tapta Sturmi. A person who enjoys sexual relations with animals is put into the hell known as Raja Kantaka Shalak Mali. A person born into an aristocratic or highly placed family, but who does not act accordingly, is put into the hellish trench of blood, pus, and urine called the Vaitarani River. One who lives like an animal is put into the hell called Puyota. A person who mercilessly kills animals in the forest without sanction is put into the hell known as Pranaroda. A person who kills animals in the name of religious sacrifice is put into the hell named Vishasana, in the name of religious. It's not talking about Vedic religious sacrifices, but they're not allowed in this day and age. But like, you know, what was going on in the temple in Jerusalem. A man who forces his wife to drink his semen is put into the hell known as Lalabaksha. One who sets a fire or administers poison to kill someone is put into a hell known as Sara Mayadana. A man who earns his livelihood by bearing false witness is put into the hell known as Avicii. A person addicted to drinking wine is put into a hell named Ayapana. That's just wine, not even heavy liquor. One who violates etiquette by not showing proper respect to superiors is shown into the hell, put into the hell known as Kshara Karma. A person who sacrifices human beings to Bhairava is put into the hell known as Raksho Gana Bhojana. A person who kills pet animals is put into the hell called Shula Prota. A person who gives trouble to others is put into the hell known as Danda Shuka. One who imprisons a living entity within a cave is put into the hell known as Avata Nirodhana. A person who shows unwarranted wrath towards a guest in his house is put into the hell called Pariyavartana. A person maddened by possessing riches and thus deeply absorbed in thinking of how to collect money is put into the hell known as Suchimukha. After describing the hellish planets, Shukadeva Goswami describes how pious persons are elevated to the higher planetary system, where the demigods live, and how they come back again to this earth when the results of their pious activities are finished. Finally, he describes the universal form of the Lord and glorifies the Lord's activities. That's all we have time for. But I think it was important to go into those descriptions. Okay.
It's pretty hellish.
It's pretty hellish. Let me get this ladybug so I don't crush her in the book when I... Yeah, there probably is. Actually, they're very good. They get rid of the bad bugs on Tulsi Devi. They're performing service to the deities and to Tulsi Devi. Jai, all glorious, and Srila Prabhupada. I'm sorry.
Ready looking on Becky Jai.
Adi Purusha.